It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we're streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Currently in the box next to me, it's Anthony Haney, super producer of the show. Hey, Anthony. In that box in a little bit, joining us from L.A. will be Clinton Yates. You just heard in the hour open. Talking about, he was telling me that one of his Around the Horn colleagues, he wouldn't tell me which one. Anthony, so be a surprise coming up at 4:30. But someone that I wouldn't expect is going to the Commanders game on Monday, and I would like be shocked by it. And there's a whole discussion that we need to have off of it. So I trust Clinton enough that if he says there's a segment for it, that we'll have a segment out of it. But I'm curious to see who it is at 4:30.
And you said ESPN.
Yeah, one of his, someone from Around the Horn.
Around the Horn. Okay, gotcha.
Right, because the game's in Cincinnati. There's no one based in Cincinnati. So someone, and it sounded like a Commander's adjacent someone, is making the trip to Cincy. I don't know whether it's as a reporter or as a fan, but like he was like, this is a big deal. And I was like, okay, save it for the air. And so 4:30, we'll talk it out. That'll be fun. Also today, 5 o'clock, we will talk to Patrick Peterson, our newest Odyssey Sports NFL insider. Patrick, of course, the longtime NFL cornerback. And it was funny because Ant, earlier this week, when we were meeting with the boss man, I was like, hey, do we have any corners? Because that's a kind of a big topic right now. And he's like, actually, Patrick Peterson just became our new Odyssey Sports insider. And I was like, great. How fast can we get him? And so Pat, is going to come on with us at 5 o'clock. Very excited for that. Of course, we'll go around the NFL. We'll do our pick six at 6 today. With it being a Friday, we will, that's typically like a Thursday. Joe Witt and Cliff Kingsbury. And there was a lot, that Joe Witt had to say today that I thought was interesting, including some comments we'll get to in about 10 minutes about the play style. Who's measuring up to snuff? Who isn't? But Anthony, if you're in attendance for a record setting night, why would you start your radio show anywhere else?
You wouldn't.
All right, so let's talk about last night. The Mystic season is over. That is sad. They got to the point where the tank job had already been they won too much later in the season. So it would have been nice if they got in and made the playoffs. They get themselves at least 2 games. They probably would have played 2 games in New York realistically, and that would have been that. The Liberty are great. Instead, it will be the Dream of Atlanta, who will probably be the sacrificial lamb. But they did go out with a bang in more ways than one. First and foremost, a historic night for the W at Capital One Arena. And D.C. reminding everybody just how great of a basketball town that it is. Well, yes, many, many of the 20,000 plus there, if not the majority of them, are there to see Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. By the end, Anthony, Clark was on the bench because the Fever are headed to the playoffs, and Christy Sides in the second half was like, all right, we got our sweat for the night with our starters. Let's get some bench players some minutes and not risk injury. But what we got was a tremendous game that went down to the wire. Indiana misses a shot at the buzzer that would have won it. So the Mystics finished the season on a win. Unfortunately for them, Chicago lost and Atlanta won. So that combination of results last night means Atlanta goes to the playoffs. The Mystics will have the 4th best odds in the upcoming lottery. But it was a really great atmosphere. And it's the kind of thing, Anthony, that I think the crowd and the game and everything about it was good enough without a huge night from Clark. She was very good. She had 8 points and 8 assists in 20 minutes. So Caitlin certainly, you know, hits a step back 3 at one point. Like she did the things that the people that went to see Caitlin got to see their ounce of Caitlin and get to go home happy. But it's not like once they realized she wasn't coming back in the game, anybody left. And I think that's the thing that I hope is a draw moving forward for the league. Is that people might get drawn into a game or go to a game because of Caitlin or because of Angel or Nika Mule or Aaliyah Edwards or any of these rookies that they followed from college on in. But once they're there, as 20,000 record crowd for the WNBA in its history last night saw at Capital One Arena, there's plenty more to watch. And I think if you had done a satisfaction survey for anybody that went to the game last night, rate 1 through 5, Anthony, I do dare say that there would be a lot of 5s on that survey.
A ton of 5s. Definitely a very thrilling ending to the game. The Mystics, apparently the Mystics were down, what was it, 18-2?
They were, which you didn't know, which is funny because, yeah. So peel back the curtain a little bit. I obviously did the show from there yesterday. Anthony was sitting right where he is right now, in the control room in our Navy Yard studios. And so he went there after. And so, Anthony, you could have, by the way, listened in the car because we are your radio home for the Mystics. Silly goose. Anthony did not see the first part of the game. He was trying to get to the game because it tipped off right at 7 o'clock, right after our show ended. And so he gets there. The Mystics had already come back at that point and actually built up at one point a pretty significant lead, double-digit lead of their own.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the game, I actually had to drop some equipment with Anthony that he could bring back to the station today. So we watched the end of the game, the final minute together, and he's like, dang, we survived that one. We shouldn't. Yeah, a 17-point lead. How is this even close? And I'm like, buddy, you knew we were down 18-2 at the start, right? And the bigness of your eyes, Anthony, let me know in that very moment. No, you did not know that they were up or down 18-2 to start when Clark and company were cooking, the starters for Indiana.
Yeah, I did not know that. So that made the game even more interesting when I found that out. But, yeah, the fact that the Fever had, you know, two chances at the end of the game to actually go ahead and, you know, steal the game made it all, you know, the more interesting just because we had the lead. They hit some timely shots. We couldn't buy a basket towards the end. And then when we got a couple of good looks, we didn't convert them. So it was just, man, and I was on my feet. I was on my feet. I was so excited. I was recording the end of the game. And, yeah, a lot of people
you
definitely
were in
did.
Full fan mode.
I was. I love to be in full fan mode just because –
Yeah,
I didn't get to experience a lot of games when I was in high school. I got to experience them when I was in college, but high school and things. But when I was actually a kid, I never really had those experiences. So now it's just, you know, the kid in me being fully brought out now that I work a ton of sporting events and I don't really get to be a fan. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's great to engage that fan mode. And what was, I think, really cool for the Mystics, I saw JP Flame tweeted from the Junkies this morning about how he tweeted this, or we tweeted it last night. I saw it this morning, but he tweeted this out when they were down 20-7 at that point. And he brought his daughter last night. His daughter wore a Caitlin Clark shirt. And I saw his tweet of like, man, this stinks for the Mystics. Like, all these people are here, and it sounds like an Indiana home game. But I saw him in the replies later say what was true, which is at the end of the game, like, everyone's rooting for Washington. Like, it was a Mystics home game by the end. There were a ton of Caitlin fans in the building.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of that same thing that we've seen NBA arenas have for years when you got a fan of the home team who also has a favorite player who's on the other team. And they wind up kind of rooting for both teams. You root for LeBron and the Wizards. Or you root for Steph Curry and in, you know, whatever arena he's in on that given night. And since Caitlin especially didn't play very much, barely, if at all, in the second half, like the whole arena was engaged because it was a close game. And you had all these people in 22 Fever shirts that were rooting for the Mystics, and it was a really great time. So what I'm hoping is if the Fever or if the Mystics and Monumental's ticket department is functional, which I'm sure it is, they do a good job over there, all those 20,000 people are getting emails today. Season tickets available for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Want to sign up? Did you have a good time? Hey now. And I hope that we get more games there next year. Obviously, if the very slim lottery odds pay off and Paige Beckers
Please.
Is going to have a lot of games at Capital One next year. But even so, I'm hoping that there's more, not just, you know, Chicago, Indiana. I would love to see them play Vegas there, you know, and New York potentially. Like, there's so much star power in this league, and it's only going to grow. You know, if L.A. has Paige, and they got Paige and Cameron Brink and you know, Rakia Jackson, like, that would be a game that would probably sell a lot of tickets at Capital One Arena. So hopefully it's a place that we're doing a lot more shows from next year, and a place that we're going to more often. And, you know, cool to see in such a basketball town like D.C., them sell out Capital One last night, get that 20,000-plus, set the record for the biggest crowd in WNBA history. And I also think I just saw a press release. I didn't get past the headline, but let me click on it real quick. I do believe Monumental also set a viewing record last night. So I think that there was a ratings record for the biggest, yeah. Monumental Sports Network sets new WNBA single game viewership mark during Thursday. Mystics game, network registers highest regular season single game ratings in more than eight seasons for yesterday's game against Indiana. So not only were there people in the building, people that were watching at home, and for considering the Mystics had an extremely outside chance of making the playoffs, mm-hmm. The interest level in their chance, not to mention, hey, I get to watch Caitlin Clark on my local regional sports net. That's a cool thing to see. And if you want more on kind of the growth of the sport and also a playoff preview, did a special episode of the Hoffman W Sports WNBA show today. That's available in podcast feeds and on the internet on YouTube at Hoffman W Sports. But when we get back here on the radio, we will dive back into the football. And that's where we will spend most of our Friday. Again, Clinton Yates at 4:30, Patrick Peterson at 5, around the NFL 5:30, Pick 6 at 6, Take Command at 6:30. And next, Joe Witt Jr. was asked how many players on his defense are actually playing the play style that he wants to see. And his answer is making some waves. We'll play it for you next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. You need more juice for me, Anthony? I'm not loud enough?
Yeah, for some reason, it's not coming across that loud.
On Comrex 1?
Yep.
Dang, what levels look all good over here? This is behind the scenes radio, but hey, it is what it is. We got to... got to make an adjustment. Hold on. I got to disappear for a second because the volume knob's down there. It's out of reach.
All right.
3, 2, 1. Pew!
See you, Craig. All right. And this is the part of the show where Anthony Haney III faces his fears. All right. Craig is back.
It's not that far away. How's the volume now? Do we sound loud and clear?
Yes. A lot better.
Excellent. All right. Everyone adjust your headphones. By the way, This is if you were listening at a very specific point of the show yesterday, this part is for you, and then we'll get to the Joe Witt sound in like 60 seconds here. But, Anthony, we talked yesterday during Never Read the Comments about whether or not we should exclude the whistle sound effects because apparently it's like scaring people and it's causing problems with dogs and all this kind of stuff. So when I posted the pick six yesterday, I edited it down. I did put a little mini fade on the whistle at the start. So it's less harsh. It's less like boom whistle, and it's more of like whistle. So don't say I never did anything for you. People complaining on the internet about volume levels. We're here to serve you, and we did. And it takes an extra small click, and I do think it will make a big difference without ruining the je ne sais quoi of the Pick Six Open.
Look at you being a man for others, Craig.
That's how I roll.
We love to see that, man.
I'm here to surf.
Yes.
Here to be a dancing monkey for all of your entertainment. Okay, let's get to the Joe Witt sound. So the Commanders have talked quite a lot. Dan Quinn, chiefly, have talked about we got to play our style and we want to impose our play style. You hear that term a lot. And then it's like, okay, well, what does play style mean? Play style is we're going to play fast. We're going to play physical. And I think last week, more so than in week one against Tampa, you start to see some examples of that. You start to see some guys that are really thumping as tacklers, as hitters, the way they take on blocks, the way they obviously bring down ball carriers, make contact with ball carriers, just a general speed and quickness and a tenacity with how they play that says like, oh, that's different. That is different not only than what's been here in the past, but then what is on the field and other players right now. You can see who's in and who's out, if you will. And today, Joe Witt Jr. was asked specifically, hey, who on the team is actually playing up to that level?
Frankie Louvu, it starts with him. The way he runs and hits. You know, this last game, I we won it and it was good, but Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvu, Ben and Quan, I think Quan played really good the first game, even though we didn't play good as a defense. Those four men have been playing the play style, okay? All right, Frankie Louvu runs and hits and puts his body on people in a very violent manner. And we have to get everybody to do that. All right. Kwan, you know, the Tampa game, we did not play a good game defensively, but he came out of the post and had some really nice tackles and some space tackles that were hard. So did Percy. They had some space tackles that were hard. Now, we have to get 11 guys doing it every time. And then we talked about playing with a deep crew. When those guys get tired, all right, the next group that come in have to be able to do it. And so, but if you're asking, of plays, you know, Frankie, his whole play style is what we're looking for as a defense, from a physicality, run and hit. And I thought Bobby Wagner, I challenged him on some things this past week in the coverage aspect, and he was all over it, man. He played really well this last game. Those two men play really well.
That makes me feel good as an analyst, because when I watch the tape, those are the two that stand out. Those are the two that if you watch and you watch with that specificity, because like we talk about watching tape, and like anybody can watch tape, but you got to watch tape with intention. You have to say like, okay, on this round through the tape, I am watching coverage structures. I am watching how the linebackers play in terms of physicality. I'm just going to focus on the linebackers, because if you try to see everything, it's impossible. I mean, even on the same play, like, there's a reason that the coach's clicker does like the little rewind thing. And, thank God NFL Pro now has the ability to do kind of a version of that where you can quickly just rewind 1 second, rewind 1 second, rewind 1 second. So I can watch, okay, let me watch the X. Let me watch the outside receiver, the slot receiver, the tight end. How do they release? Okay. What coverage is the defense getting into? Like, if you really want to break down some of the plays, like, you have to have an intentionality when you watch film. But if you were to just, forget all that. Forget, I'm not watching for coverage structures, or I'm not watching to see how they rush together. I just want to sit back and watch this play. And let's see you hit somebody really hard. Let's see where my eyes go. Your eyes would go to Frankie Louvu. He's the number one guy. You'd be like, oh, someone, I just saw someone get hit really hard. Oh, Louvu was the one who hit him. That's going to happen a lot. Bobby Wagner, you're going to watch him play with physicality. I mean, especially with Wagner, like, you just watch the ball. Right? Handoff, where's the ball going? Bobby Wagner's going to arrive there, and he's going to arrive with some intention, and he's going to arrive with physicality. And those little hits, like, they really add up over the course of a game. You're just tired of getting hit by that guy. It slows down your decision-making. It slows down what you're able to do as an offense, because dudes are like, where is 54 about to come from and thump me? And that's great. That's what you want. You want to be miserable to play against. And you see Quan Martin flying out of the post. And I'm glad he mentioned Benjamin St. Juice, because Juice, not only does he arrive and tackle well and with physicality, but, you know, the tenacity piece. I talked about this earlier in the week on the play where he forces the fumble. Like, there's a really good block on that play by Malik Nabers. He has a good angle. He blocks BSJ. The play gets outside, and Benjamin never gives up on the play. He works his way back into it, and he forces the fumble. And so, yes, that was a big gain, and there's a lot of, I think, things to coach up on that play. But for Benjamin to just, hey, stick with it, play with tenacity, arrive with a purpose, whether it's to deliver a big hit, whether it's to punch the ball out, both, like, figure out a way to make a difference. Benjamin St. Juice did a lot of that. And I think you got to give credit to Juice for doing that so far through two games without picking up a bunch of, you know, PI penalties and hands to the face and all the things that he struggled with over the last couple of years in the flag department. What I think caught a lot of people's ears, though, is not necessarily who got mentioned, but it's who didn't. And it's not just that any specific D lineman didn't get mentioned. It's that none of them did. And that includes not just Allen and Payne, but like Dorrance Armstrong, who has played for Dan and Joe in the past. Like, Dante Fowler has been with Dan for a long time. And I do think Fowler plays with a bit more urgency. Like, I watch Fowler and I go, I get why Dan Quinn likes this guy. So I think, you know, for some of them, it might be more of Joe was thinking of other guys. You know, he's not tacking through everybody. But I do think that if the D line was setting the example, he would mention them first. Because if I say, like, hey, violence, physicality, you know, speed, effort, who's playing with that? And the D-line was, like, busting their butts every single play and setting the tone, then Joe Witt wouldn't default to Frankie Louvu, because those other guys would be the ones setting the tone. And instead, it's the other way around. And so it's easy to be forgotten when you're not doing it at as high of a level. And so it's not necessarily like he called out anybody specifically for not doing it. The fact that none of the defensive linemen jumped to mind immediately, and all these back seven players do, and not all of them, but all the ones that he mentioned do, that in itself says enough. And if you want to talk about why this defense has struggled to the extent that it struggled so far, it's exactly that. And so what I think is funny is sometimes it's like, oh, I don't care about they play physicality. I need them to make plays. And it's like, you realize one leads to the other, right? You realize that part of the play style is to not just to have an attitude that sounds real good in a press conference. It's because if you play more physically, especially within the line of scrimmage, and you win some of those hand-to-hand combats, then maybe Jeremy Chinn's not stuck making a tackle in a gigantic gap because you fought back against a double team more physically, more violently, that shrinks down the gap. Jeremy Chinn's got an easier job. He can make the tackle instead of missing it. Maybe you get to the quarterback a little bit sooner and he doesn't have a chance to escape, and you finish some of the plays that have been almost because you got that little bit of extra oomph to your rush. These are the kinds of things that these little things that stack up and ultimately get the results. And so I do think it's a fairly big deal that Joe Witt said this, but I will also caveat it by saying we are two games into the season. These guys have never played together. There's a confidence that allows you to play faster and thus more physically and violently that they clearly don't have in this system and off of each other yet. And things as they are don't mean that's how they always will be. And my sincere hope is starting Monday night against Cincinnati that the D-line joins the party because they need them to. And if this defense is going to have any chance of being a top half in the league this year, that's the group that's got to lead the way. And the linebackers supplementing it, not the linebackers dragging everybody else like it kind of has been through two games. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, Clinton Yates joins us, and he's got something to tell me about a colleague from around the horn that's going to this game on Monday night, and it's really important, and he thinks there's a whole discussion off of it. We'll see what Yates means with all of that next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. And we welcome back for his last Friday visit for a while because he's going to start joining us on Wednesdays during football season, but it's Monday Night Football this week. So what's a day, Clinton Yates? What's a day?
Speaking of Monday Night Football, I was told one thing by a colleague that I thought you should know. We're doing television around the horn. And, you know, before the show, you sit around and you talk with your various cohorts on the air.
I've heard that's called Before the Horn.
Before the Horn, correct. BTH, as it's known. So Kevin Blackstone, the professor, D.C. area native, Good Counsel High graduate, professor at Maryland. We all know his work. He says to me, Yates, I got something I want you to know. I was like, what's that, KB? He says, I am going for the first time in a decade non-media to see the Commanders play a football game. This man is going in Gen Pop to whatever that field is named now.
Northwest Stadium.
Sure. Southwest Stadium. Call it whatever you want. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, look, that bank paid a lot of money. That credit union paid a lot of money for that. Don't you
disparage. I'm sure that you can get your daily, direct deposit a day early with them or whatever. My point is, KB is going, just as a regular fan, to this game. And I understand that this sounds ridiculous. And if you are of the type that really values your experience at NFL games, please do not jump on me as being some type of a bougie person. But you have to understand.
No, jump on me, because that's absolutely what I am.
Then you have to understand that once you get accustomed to a certain amount of access at games, it legitimately becomes less fun to just sit in the crowd and go, because it's a completely different thing and you're there for entirely different reasons. Never mind if you've already been jaded as a fan. Craig, my jaw dropped. I was like, why are you going? Is somebody from Maryland in the game? Is there a Good Counsel or even WCAC grad playing on the field? He's like, nope, just plain interested. I was shocked, Gregory. Shocked.
That is nuts. Yeah. If you had told me an around the horn panelist was going, I would have picked like probably three or four people not from DC before I picked Blackstone to go to Northwest Stadium as a fan on Monday night. But I feel like that's happening for sure more and more. Like, I mean, well, I guess the game Monday is in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So that's probably worth pointing out before anybody goes searching for tickets.
Yes.
It's like, wait, I thought the game was, I want to go. No, it's not Monday, or not Monday at home. But I do wonder how, like, the Giants was such an interesting home opener because you always have the fans come down from New York and Philly. It's close. It's just very easy to get to. But I do wonder this year, especially if they can at least ride around 500,
yep,
what the fan base looks like. And how Jaden plays is going to be a huge thing. I don't have to tell you that the last time there were great home crowds on a regular basis, there was a quarterback that was the future of the franchise, number two pick, that was drawing a lot of that attention.
Yeah, my friend
but
Bob.
I do think that with some of the upgrades they made to the stadium, the general effort, like, I do think fans care about that. Like, the fans that would spend money to go to a game, like, care, like, hey, this owner seems to be trying for us. And that alone, like, the attitude going in will help your fan experience versus, like, almost going out of spite. It is something that definitely have a pin in it. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. And, I think about this a lot because, look, we're arguing with senators in Montana over what's going to happen at RFK, which is a whole other matter. And I think that Harris is actually in a really tough position here in terms of managing that group of people, like a KB, the people who are like, I'm still willing, I'm still able. It would not be a bad thing for me to go to a game, but there's just been so much ridiculousness over time, never mind the state of the stadium, that I don't want to do it. And here's another thing that I want to mention while we're on this topic, because my dad, of all people, sent me an email about this, referring to that Montana situation. But I thought to myself, I said, you know, I remember what RFK was like, but also I was a child, like genuinely was a person of a young, impressionable mind. And I remember what it was like at what was then known as Rowl John, because we had season tickets, and how that changed as an adult. I don't think that you can simply by sight exactness, as in the literal place where the previous stadium was, you're not trying to match the old thing. That's just not what it's going to be like, because that's just not possible. And I'm very interested to see how this plays out in terms of what the holdover fan experience is from whatever they thought they were taking from RFK to Northwest Credit Union Funding Bank Situation Financial Institution Field.
You got to get the word federal in there, because the nickname that we have chosen around these parts is the Fed.
Okay, sure. Love it. The Fed, the FEC, whatever you want to call it. Whatever experience they're taking from one to another to what's going to be the next, to me, is almost far more interesting than what the football team does, because that's a toss-up pretty much every year in terms of talent.
Sure. That's a great point, too, in terms of, like, there is an expectation of, like, oh, we'll be back in the spiritual home. Will that mean something to some people? Yes. And, like, in some ways, the experience in the parking lot will be far more similar to what you remember than in the stadium, because
correct,
they're going to build a world-class stadium, because that's how this ownership group, you know, that's how they roll. Is it's not going to be, like, the beauty of RFK, but especially by the end, was like, it's a dump, but it's our dump. The stadium shakes. The stadium ain't going to shake. Like, the stadium is going to be built on solid ground.
And it won't be a baseball field either, which is what RFK is, sidebar. It's a ballpark, in case we forgot that part of everything.
It was. It's yeah.
Well whatever. You know my point. That place was built for baseball,
I know your
quite
point.
Literally, you know?
No, I 100% get your point. But there is, like, I had this comment the other day on you know, we had Sam Fortier on to talk about his reporting on this. Mm-hmm. And someone was like, oh, I can't wait for people to remember how long it takes to get there. And I'm like, what are, compared to Landover? What are you talking about? You mean the one with the metro stop right there? And there's just like a reality to, there is this, like, the spiritual side of the RFK thing. But there's also a logistics side. And that's always been my point, is like, from a logistical standpoint, yeah, they're going to have to do some construction. They're going to have to widen some roads. They're going to have to probably redo some of the metro stuff out there. They're going to have to really be on their P's and Q's from, like, the urban planner standpoint, in a way that Washington, D.C. always isn't.
Yeah.
But it's certainly better logistically than, hey, this is in the middle of a neighborhood in Landover. Because as someone who sat in an hour of traffic, to get into the stadium this weekend, like, that sucked. Like, I was literally driving past an apartment complex. Like, this road ain't built for 80,000 people to get in and out. What are we doing? RFK, I think, can be, I don't know if it's retrofitted or refitted to do that in a way. Plus, the public transit is a complete game changer. It's the only way to make any stadium anywhere in the world, accessible to mass amounts of people without it being a god awful experience, and it's just a requirement.
Well, you know, we're since we're into the urban planning discussion, I don't necessarily know that I agree that the situation automatically gets better. Everything you retrofit between dealing with the district on Sundays for what, 10, 12 max times a year, I don't know that that's worth it for the so-called spiritual home. I don't, and it's also a situation where I feel like you also don't want to get that wrong. Like, if it turns out that you get to RFK and people are like, this actually sucks. You know what I mean? Like, that's entirely in play if it just becomes too difficult to build something there that actually is in cohesion with the rest of the neighborhood, because that's in a neighborhood too. People forget that part about RFK because they were, you know, they're blinded by the glory years of the past. And so it's a really difficult thing, but the logistics are one thing. The sort of vibe is another. And as you know, I've got plenty of friends who still go to games who are season ticket holders as well. And they're going for the people that are there. You know what I'm saying? They're not necessarily that pressed about the football. So I was happy to see them get a win in the simple context of the fans were rewarded. But, you know, I still think that this challenge is so much more difficult than just go back to RFK. Everything will be fine as far as fan experience is concerned. It's much harder than that.
Clint Yates, ESPN, with us here on the Hoffman Show. So, if you're, I don't know what your schedule, you haven't sent the email yet for next week because you don't send your
okay,
friends and family.
Right. Here's what I'm on TV. The curtain, okay? The emails have been a little off recently.
It's a great idea. It's something that I should do, but I just hope that everybody, the amount of times I have like aunts and whoever, they're like, what time's your show again? I'm like, the one I've been doing at the same time for how many years now? The point is, Clinton.
Yes.
Tuesday, if you're on Around the Horn and Jaden Daniels plays well, and the Commanders upset the Bengals, what's the conversation? And then perhaps if we had to pick likeliness, this might be a little bit more likely if we're being honest. If he struggles on Monday night, what's the conversation like on Around the Horn Tuesday?
So there's two things happening here. Number one is the opponent. The Bengals are a team of favor, I would say, when it comes to what the national lens is. People want the Bengals to be good. People like Joe Burrow. People think Ja'Marr Chase is an exciting player because he is. I don't think the Commanders are anywhere close to that. So an upset, I think, will be looked at as what's going on with the Bengals. Do they have a real problem? To be fair. Now, that said, the second part about this is that that's the advantage of being off the national radar, is that you don't have the Stephen A's and Shannon Sharps yelling about you every week to the point that they could potentially change your own personal narrative inside of your building. That is, in fact, an advantage, in my opinion, for the Commanders. Let the kid develop. I said this on television yesterday. I've been saying this for daggone near a decade. Quarterback, worst coach position in the league. Do not pull a Carolina Panthers, y'all, and have some goofy out of the locker room conversation all the time just because you happen to lose a couple games. The Bob situation was unique. There was a power balance failure between head coach, GM, and owner that was usurped over all of the football, and it screwed everything up. Thank goodness that they're not in that situation now, and I hope that expectations can be managed. Sure. Does a win against the Bengals on Monday Night Football solidify you a little bit in terms of the fact that you probably belong in the NFL? Absolutely. But don't get too fired up about this. This is a long process. So because the Bengals are so much far ahead of the Commanders in terms of what their believed paths to success are, I think win or lose, the story is the Bengals and Joe Burrow.
That is probably correct. Thinking about the graphics on the bottom of Around the Horn as I watch on mute because we're on at 5 o'clock, and it's definitely going to be Bengals first. Then reality be like, by the way, the Commanders, and then you get to your Jaden Daniels topic because it's a rookie quarterback, and when it comes to rookie quarterbacks, we can't help ourselves.
Exactly.
Clint Yates, you can watch him on Around the Horn. You can listen to him on ESPN Daily, and that comes out
daily.
Daily.
Turns out.
Clint Yates, everybody. He'll be back on Wednesday here on the Hoffman Show.
Thank you, Gregory. You're doing a lot of shows today. Run along.
All right. Coming up at 5 o'clock, we are going to actually let you hear some of Take Command. We were supposed to have Patrick Peterson. He had something come up. Everything's okay. For all I know, he got a flat tire and everything's fine. Hope that it's nothing serious. But he unfortunately is not going to be able to join us today. So, we will instead, since we can't give you Patrick Peterson, we'll give you Logan Paulson, which I think the person on planet Earth, Anthony, that would laugh hardest at that statement is probably Logan Paulson.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider it a shot. That was a very good joke.
And I think a lot of fans would probably be like, honestly, I'd rather hear from Logan. Well, I don't know what Patrick Peterson's media stat I know as a player.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have Patrick Peterson. You know who else I'd rather have Patrick Peterson? Logan Paulson would have rather had Patrick Peterson than himself. But that's okay. Everyone's got their things. And Pat might be awesome. We just hired him as our new Odyssey Sports Insider. I think our bosses are probably pretty smart people. They hired the people that hired the people that hired us, Anthony. I mean, how dumb can they be?
Pretty smart.
I think that's pretty smart. So I'm excited to have Pat on. We'll definitely have him on this season. I wanted to talk to him about the cornerback stuff, obviously, but we will get to some other stuff that Logan and I talked about, specifically how can you unlock the deep ball in the Commanders offense. That's what we're going to let you hear coming up at 5 o'clock. With Patrick having to reschedule with us, hopefully for next week. I honestly, to be fully transparent with all of you in the audience, we were hoping that we could get him on Monday. Also on Monday, I think we're going to have a member of the Monday Night crew as we prepare for Monday Night Football. So Monday's going to be a weird show, Anthony. Like, this whole week's been weird because all the stuff that we do is off by a day. And Monday's going to be weird because Monday's typically our huge review day, and we'll be previewing the game that people care about the most.
So
like, what should we do on Monday? Like, how much at 5:30 on Monday, or like 3 hours to kickoff, are we gonna do our around the NFL? I think we probably will. People still care about all the other games that happen. Everyone's gonna have watched them because they won't have spent their Sunday watching the Commanders.
Yeah. Or do we move it to, I don't know.
I think we probably keep it. And then Tuesday becomes kind of Monday. But like, should I do a 1st and 10 on the rest of the games of the weekend? We could do that.
Mm.
There's possibilities, Anthony.
Yeah, and you got the storylines. We got some fascinating storylines for a couple.
We still do. We'll still do our pick six like it was a Friday. So we'll do our pick six players that we are looking forward to watching. It'll just be like, hey, here's the players we're planning on watching in 2.5 hours versus players we plan on watching on Sunday.
Yeah.
So we'll hey, what did we say? Those bosses that hired Patrick Peterson,
mm-hmm.
smart because they hired us. We got to prove that they're smart. We got to do our jobs.
You're right.
Got to do well. You doing anything this weekend?
Am I? Yeah, I'm doing a lot this weekend. So tonight, after I leave here, I'm going to go watch Georgetown Prep football. I haven't been able to make it to any of their games, so I got to go see my guys. They play.
Are they good?
They are 3-1 to start.
Really? 4 weeks into the high school season?
2-1.
Gross.
2-1. Oh, because okay, they had a bye week already. Yeah, they're 2-1.
So we are 4 weeks in. Gracious.
Yeah. But we got some talent. We got some D1 talent. We have a freshman who just got an offer from Syracuse.
Clearly, he should accept it and not accept any more offers.
Yeah, he got two right now, Virginia Tech and Syracuse.
Get out of here, Hokies.
And then, so I'm going to go watch those guys. I'm going to wash my clothes because this weekend I'm going to be gone. Tomorrow morning, I'll be driving down to Virginia.
The way you said that was so funny. Not like, I got to do some laundry. It's like, I'm going to wash my clothes. Like, it's something you don't do often enough.
Oh, no. I wash it pretty much every week, to be honest. I try to anyway.
Yeah, do laundry. It's funny, though, because, like, when you're a single human,
yeah,
your laundry rotation is just not that tight because it doesn't have to be like,
nope.
In part, it doesn't fill up the machine. So you kind of got to have a little bit of patience.
Exactly.
But when you're a couple, nevertheless, a family, like that laundry, that rotation a lot quicker.
Yeah. I'm already knowing my dad is down. He spends his entire Sunday in the basement just because he used to just wash clothes and fold them at the same time. So yeah, tomorrow morning I'll be driving down to Richmond. For a HBCU Go TV game. Virginia State is playing Winston-Salem State. And then after that game, I will be flying to Indianapolis because on Sunday, I will be watching the Colts.
You are doing a high school, college, NFL football. That's impressive.
48 hours, baby.
And then you're back in – are you flying from Richmond straight to Indy?
Yeah, so I got a rental. I'll be taking down to Richmond. Then I'll be flying out of Richmond. And ironically enough, my layover is at Dulles. So I'm just like,
I was going to say, I don't think, because I booked flights from Richmond to Indy for Gores in the past, my training podcast business partner.
Uh-huh.
Because when we book that stuff, I book it for on our Train with the Best business stuff. And so I happen to know there's not any directs. And so we've had that same bit where it's like, do you want to just drive to DC and fly with me? Like, no, I'll take the connection.
Yeah. I didn't want to have to drive again. And I might hit traffic driving back, so I was just like, I'll just fly to Richmond.
I will say, you're doing the least fun. There's a more fun connection available for you, Anthony.
Which is?
Chicago. Here's why Chicago's a more fun connection. You time travel. Chicago and Indianapolis are about a 20-minute flight.
And they're
30-minute flight. And they're an hour apart.
Yep.
So you can land and then take off. Let's say your connection takes off from Chicago at 11 a.m. Central Time. You will land. I guess it's better the other way around. I guess you kind of, if you were flying back through Chicago, that's what it is. So if you were to leave Indy at 11 a.m. Eastern, you can land in Chicago at like 10:30. It's a wacky bit.
Yeah.
Right on the edge of a time zone.
Yeah.
But I guess going there is not as good.
Yeah.
It's just going to be annoying because you're going to be like, oh, cool, I'm at Dulles.
Yeah, and I'll be...
A statement no one has ever said. Oh, cool. I'm at Dulles. All due respect.
Yeah. I got that. I get into Indy, I want to say 11. My line brother's going to pick me up. Go to the game on Sunday. Colts need to get a win. They have to get a win. 0-2? Oh, man.
Yeah, they need it.
You cannot go 0-3 and expect to make the playoffs.
No. The stats for 0-2 are terrible.
Stats for 0-3, there's only been one team to come back and make the playoffs.
Really?
So the Bengals are 0-2. The Ravens are 0-2. The Colts are 0-2. There are a whole bunch of 0-2 teams in the AFC, and we already know how challenging the AFC is. So, got to get
it. Maybe not if they're all 0-3. Maybe it's a year to make some history.
Uh-oh.
Doing it all together.
Yeah. But I think the Texans was the team to do it, 2018 Texans, where they ended up 11-5. Yeah.
Stats and information, Anthony, over here.
Hey, look, I'll be on Twitter, you know. I'll be browsing.
Oh, you saw it on Twitter? Yeah, how do you know that's even true?
I'm pretty sure.
Who tweeted it?
I couldn't tell you. I can't credit it, to be honest.
All right. Well, then we probably want to double check that.
Okay.
All right. I'm doing nothing this weekend. I need to do nothing this weekend. I'm a dead man walking right now.
You're tired?
I want to rest. I'm excited. Spirit play tonight. I will sit on my couch and watch that. I will try not to fall asleep. I don't care what I was. The Super Bowl could be on tonight, and I would be trying not to fall asleep watching it. Tomorrow, there's nothing on the schedule. Sunday, there is sit on your butt and watch Red Zone on the schedule.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's the opposite of what you're doing. You are doing the most. I am doing the least. And if you average us out, we are doing the right amount this weekend. When we get back... Take command. Can the Commanders unlock the deep ball in the Jaden Daniels-led offense? And if so, how would they do it? We discuss amongst myself and Logan Paulson. Next is the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.